Good morning. This morning, we're going to continue talking about the Bodhisattva ceremony, and we are talking about the precepts. And in particular, I am talking about the meaning of the verses that follow each precept. And last time I talked about the first three, so this time I'm going to talk about the next three. And the first one of those is, I vow to refrain from false speech. And the verse that goes with it is, the Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew saturates all and harvests the truth. Okay, so let's take a look at this. The Dharma wheel turns from the very beginning. This is reality itself functioning. So this Dharma wheel is reality itself functioning. So this includes the self, it includes the other, it includes what is seen and unseen. Everything is included in this statement. The Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. From the beginning of life throughout time and space, this is how the world is making the world. As we say, there is no beginning and no end, no gap. So that's the first line. The Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. The next line is, there is neither surplus nor lack. Neither surplus nor lack. Surplus and lack can only arise within the context of comparisons. In the case of the Dharma wheel turning, this means things are just as they are. We say, in Zen, we say, just this. So, in reference to talking about false speech, you may think that always saying what you perceive as being true may be turning the Dharma wheel. This is black and white thinking. It is falling into the trap of what the verse is calling surplus and lack. So can a person see things as true or untrue and always speak the truth regardless of the situation? What is this truth if it arises from comparison to a concept divorced from the actual relationship, the situation that you're in? What is this truth if it's divorced from intimacy and communion with our current circumstances? So when we're in a relationship with another, it's not always helpful to be honest, at least our version of what we call honest. If we're breaking up with someone, is it true speech to tell them about your dilemma over the person that you now love instead of them? Or is this harmful to keep talking about this other person in your life? It may be honest what you're thinking, but is it helpful? Is it necessary for the person you're leaving to hear these thoughts? Probably not. The Buddha's criteria for right speech, which many of us know, we've heard this before, is this. The first one is it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind or spoken with goodwill? And the fourth one is it crafted for the other person's ears? And the fifth one is it the right time? So they are, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind or spoken with goodwill? Is it crafted for the other person's ears? And is it the right time? So these are the criteria for not engaging in false speech. This is the practical advice about following this precept. And then when it is followed, we say this is the sweet dew. So this next line is, the sweet dew saturates all and harvests the truth. Sweet dew, the expression sweet dew is from the Lotus Sutra. And we chant it in the verse of the Universal Gateway, which is a chant that is chanted at Ocean Gate on a regular basis. And the line is, the precepts of compassion roar like thunder. So this precept, I vow to refrain from false speech, This precept is about compassion. All the precepts are about compassion. We say the precepts of compassion. So those are these precepts. The precepts of compassion roar. They roar like thunder. So they are very powerful. And this kind heart is wondrous as the great clouds pouring down the rain, Dharma rain of sweet dew. Pouring down the Dharma rain of sweet dew, quenching all flames of troubling passion. So this sweet dew is very powerful. This sweet dew is the Buddhist version of mana, our nutrient that always sustains us in a very satisfying way. This dew, or another way to call it is Dharma rain, refers to the Buddha's ability to speak the Dharma in such a way that everyone hears what they need to hear in order to follow the teachings. And the Lotus Sutra, it has to do with a parable about the Dharma rain or the sweet dew nourishes everything equally, whether you're a tree or a grass, everything is a flower, everything is equally nourished according to its needs. So if we use right speech, the speech of this sweet dew, the speech of the Dharma wheel turning, then we will naturally follow Shakyamuni's admonitions. Our words will be helpful, compassionate, wise, and in sync with what is needed at that time. So again, the verse is, the Dharma wheel turns from the very beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew saturates all and harvests the truth. The next precept here is, I vow to refrain from giving or receiving intoxicants. I vow to refrain from giving or receiving intoxicants. The verse is, originally pure, don't defile. This is the great awareness. Originally pure, don't defile. This is the great awareness. So there are two ideas or principles associated with being intoxicated. So being intoxicated is not limited to how we usually think about it, like you drank too much wine the night before, or you're taking drugs, or maybe you have some kind of sexual or obsession as intoxication. So we can become intoxicated by many situations, by many things. So essentially, intoxication refers to being in the state of delusion. So the bodhisattva vow is to benefit all beings. But how can we benefit ourselves or others in a state of intoxication? How can we be clear-eyed when we are intoxicated? Our minds are fuzzy and our discernment is weakened in a state of intoxication. So intoxication in this application is not different from delusion. So why would we want to foster? Why would we want to have a foggy mind that has no chance of waking up or engaging in realized action? So we want to refrain from intoxicants that create delusion of any kind. So the verse says, originally pure, don't defile. So what is it to say something is originally pure? Original purity refers to our true nature, which is by definition awakened. This is the true original self, our true mind and heart, in accord with the whole of our world, or in accord with any situation that we find ourselves in, because it is, of course, within the context of each particular situation that we are encountering. We don't encounter the whole world simultaneously. The whole world may be functioning in an interconnected, completely related mandala of activity, but what we experience with this body, this mind, this heart, what we experience is a particular situation that we're engaged in. So in this engagement, we have to let go of our self-centered motivations as much as we can. In this way, our wisdom eye can come forward. And this is not possible if we were caught in this selfish delusion of intoxication. In the last lecture, I offered a quote of Suzuki Roshi's, his definition of purity. He said, "By purity, we just mean things as they are. When something is added, that is impure. When something becomes dualistic, that is not pure. By purity, we just mean things as they are." So things as they are is messy. It's a messy situation. Life is a messy situation. This is the world of samsara. There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. So he's saying, just meeting things as they are, making your absolute best effort, that's what this pure action is about. That's what we can do. That is our practice. He says, when something is added, that is impure. And what is that something? That something is when we are caught in our selfishness. That something is when we are caught in delusion. That something is when we are caught in some kind of greed and hate. When it's not right. When it's off, not in sync. So he said, when something becomes dualistic, that is not pure. Self and other, separated. Without compassion or empathy. Not seeing it from the other side. So, this things as they are is our original state. It is being in sync with our current situation, with an open Buddha eye. Thus, it is originally pure, currently pure, and always pure, until we cloud this purity with delusion. So, this delusion, this delusional thinking is defiling our original nature, our true self. It is being intoxicated in some shape or form. So the good news is that when our delusion drops away, we immediately contact and enact our true nature. Moment after moment after moment. So every moment is an opportunity to come back and express our true nature. So don't be depressed. Don't get bummed out when you make a mistake. Just do better the next time. Pay attention. Use your Buddha, let your Buddha mind come forth. And when we do this, this is the great awareness. So originally pure, don't defile. This is the great awareness. So when we are able to do this, our great awareness is manifest. So to say don't defile, originally pure, don't defile, means don't engage in activities that you know are the source of intoxication and create delusion, confusion, foggy practice. Like, stay aware and connected with your life. Sometimes we don't know what these situations are, but if we're aware, if we pay attention to our heart and our minds, if we pay attention to the situation that we're in, it will telegraph to us that we are in a situation that is causing a kind of intoxication. So stay aware and connected with your life. Stay awake. Be aware of life, of your life, and with the life of all beings simultaneously who are with you, standing with you, acknowledging our problems. We need to acknowledge our problems. And in this way, we get freed from mental disturbances. If we do not acknowledge that we have a problem, how can we be freed from that problem? It is delusional thinking to think that we can just cut it off, because it will inevitably come back in some other way in which we are not conscious of. And there suddenly we realize we've done something that's really screwy or unhelpful or harmful. So don't defile refers to this. try not to get caught. So we acknowledge our problems, and then by doing that, by transforming our problems through acknowledging our problems, we can find peace. We develop wisdom. We are able to awaken to each moment as it comes and meets us. So not defiling is no different from great awareness. Dogen said in Genjo Koan, those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. In our teaching, sentient beings and Buddha are not different. And so we say, those who have great realization about delusion are Buddhas. When we educate ourselves about our own delusion, about what it is to be a human being in this world, when we do not condemn ourselves or condemn others for our delusion, but pay attention to that and learn from that, then we are Buddhas. Then we open the way for our Buddha mind to come forth, our true nature to come forth, and to actually be in connection with what's happening in any given moment, which includes everything, not just our particular view. And then he says, those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. These sentient beings are the same beings. We are both Buddha and sentient beings simultaneously. So when we're caught in this particular quotation here, when we're caught, we're being identified as sentient beings. But the reality is we are both Buddha and sentient beings. There is no difference between the two, except that these sentient beings in this Buddha field, we sentient beings in this Buddha field, get caught in delusion. Buddhas who are greatly realized do not get caught by delusion, but they don't get caught because they have great realization about delusion. So a big part of practice is how do we enact this great realization about our own delusion. This is not about someone else. It's not about someone else's delusion. If we want to follow the Buddha way, if we want to follow the Buddha way and enact the teachings, then we have to pay attention to how we conduct ourselves in the world. And then the world will let us know what's not working. So let the world be your sutra. Let your life be a sutra. Let your relationships be a sutra. So this is returning to pure mind, not defiled by delusion. We awaken to what is already present. Indeed, it is our true nature driving us to awaken and follow the precepts. What is it that motivates us? Why do we care about the Bodhisattva path? Why do we care about any of these things? Because something in our heart and our mind tells us that this is the way to great realization, which is compassion, skillful means, wisdom, and following the precepts, being able to discern what they actually mean. So this energy and effort that we make is our undefiled effort. Even if we fail, Dogen wrote in another fascicle that you can shoot an arrow at a target 100 times and you only hit the bullseye twice. And by the way, when you hit the bullseye, it's not necessarily on the 99th and 100th time. You may hit the bullseye somewhere in the midst of those 100 tries. But being able to hit the bullseye is because you made the 100 tries. So those 100 tries should not be considered to have been in vain, should not be dismissed. Those 100 tries are just as important as the times that you hit the bullseye. The more we make an effort, the more likely we are to see and develop great awareness. So this awakening mind and pure effort is delineated by following the precepts. Take the precepts as a koan. If you think, by the way, if you think you absolutely know the answer to a precept, then I suggest you take another look. Precepts are alive. Precepts function within the context of each situation that we're in. The next precept is, I vow not to slander or discuss the faults of others. And the verse for this is, in the Buddha Dharma, go together, appreciate together, realize together, and actualize together. Don't permit fault finding. Don't permit haphazard talk. Do not corrupt the way. Again, the verse is, in the Buddha Dharma, go together, appreciate together, realize together, and actualize together. Don't permit fault finding. Don't permit haphazard talk. Do not corrupt the way. So the first line is, in the Buddha Dharma, go together, appreciate together, realize together, and actualize together. When we are deeply and earnestly and compassionately practicing the way, this is to go together, appreciate together, realize together, and actualize together. This phrase, to go, to travel together, to appreciate together, to realize the Dharma together, and actualize the Dharma together, this absolutely encapsulates Soto Zen practice. Soto Zen practice is a group practice. We do all the stuff together. We get up and we go to the Zendo together in a group. For the most part in Soto Zen, we can sit Zazen by ourselves. And if you cannot come to the Zendo, then please, you should sit Zazen by yourself. It's a very efficacious thing to do. But this practice is a group practice. We do this together. We do ceremonies together. We work together. We eat together. When you go to the monastery, everything is together. People don't go off by themselves. Everything is this practice, this mandala of life functioning together. This is what all of our lives are. Whether we sit Zazen by ourselves or not, we are not divorced from life itself. Society itself. So this phrase encapsulates Soto Zen practice. We are group practice. So we strive as Sangha to appreciate, realize, and actualize the Buddha way. As individuals, we function in this group within Sangha. So Sangha is our group. Sangha is also our society. Sangha is all the world being, all beings together. But while that is so, it should not be abstract. We do the practice. We do this practice at home. And when I say home, I don't necessarily mean your house. I mean home where we are, our bodies are together. This home on the earth that we are together. In the particularity of each situation we find ourselves in. This is our immediate Sangha, our immediate community. So this is the group practice of all beings making the world together within the context of our individual activity. It is the practice of seeing that this is so and having gratitude for everyone's effort. And realize and enacting the Dharma together. So you may wonder about people that you perceive as engaging in misguided and harmful practices. You may ask, well, what about them? Shouldn't I point out their faults? So this should be considered deeply before we start pointing out other people's faults. Because all people are earnestly trying to find their path and to do good. I'm not talking about sociopaths here. I'm talking about people who don't agree with our politics our racial ideas, our societal ideas, and religious beliefs. So in cases like this, we must still approach each other with respect and listen to each other, as hard as that can be. We don't need to engage in disparaging speech, such as fault-finding, fault-finding and talking about the other person's character problems. So remember, we're talking about the precept here, I vow not to slander or discuss the faults of others. We can disagree, and in that disagreement, we still don't have to attack or slander each other. So that's the practice we want to cultivate. We want to cultivate the listening, the patience, and intelligent compassion for each other. And then the next part of this is don't permit haphazard talk. So I looked haphazard up in the dictionary, and the definition of haphazard is no principle of organization. So that thought that was kind of interesting. Our principle of organization is the Dharma teachings. In Buddhism, that's our principle of organization. So we can understand this to mean don't indulge in speech that is not guided by the Dharma, that is not guided by skillful means, compassion, and wisdom. So, you know, Jocko and I watched the 49th day memorial service for the women who were killed in L.A. at the massage parlor. And I think a lot of you might have watched this as well, because we've been sending out the link to see this for a while. We've all been talking about this. And this was the May We Gather ceremony, a national Buddhist memorial ceremony for Asian American ancestors. This was a ceremony to honor those Asian Americans, known and unknown, who have been discriminated against in the United States since Asians and Pacific Islanders have come to this country. So here's what struck me about the ceremony. Every talk, there were several talks, many short, around 5-minute talks given by monks and nuns and some lay people. Every talk, except one of them, which I have to say was given by a Zen teacher, but anyway, every talk except one of them was about cultivating compassion. And this talk was too, so I shouldn't disparage this talk. See, I'm doing exactly what I said we shouldn't do. Here we go. Here's a perfect example. Oh, shame on me. Here we are talking about the precepts, and I'm already breaking the precepts. Geez Louise, it's hard to hit that target, you know? So, forget what I just said about that. Every talk was about cultivating compassion for those who had been discriminated against, as well as those who discriminated and caused harm. So, these teachings were not intended to condone harmful actions, but to recognize the delusion of those who engage in harmful actions. I thought this was really powerful, that we were reminded through each one of these talks about our practice. So this recognition of the delusion of those who are engaged in harmful actions was not done in pity or contempt, but recognition of human frailty and the need to double down on our Buddhist practice in the face of these actions. So the talks were for us as Buddhist practitioners, saying, remember your practice, remember your practice. So haphazard talk is reckless and inflames the hearts and bodies of others. This is not the Dharma. To engage in rhetoric that is haphazard means that we are encouraging others to cause harm to their perceived enemies and abandoning the path of Buddhist teachings. We want to engage in less harmful speech to build bridges rather than encouraging violence of to any kind or degree. We want to remember to rejoin with, to return to, and to be rely upon as the foundation, rely upon our Dharma practice, our Dharma teachings, and not be pushed into hate and delusion ourselves. And the last part of this is, do not corrupt the way. So don't permit haphazard talk. Do not corrupt the way. So these two are together. When we respond to violence with violence, we are corrupting the way. So this violence doesn't have to be physical violence. When we respond with violence in our hearts, this is, if we say, oh, I'm so angry. Oh, I really want to go out and punish those people. This is a kind of violence. This is waking up to our own delusion. Now, I'm not saying that we should condone violent activity or that people should be free to engage in this kind of activity. But I'm saying that how do we set limits? How do we talk about this? How do we set the limits that are appropriate when someone is doing something that is really inappropriate? And so this too is something that we must think about. To engage in slanderous speech and haphazard speech is mindless. It's a kind of knee-jerk response. It is not the Buddha way. The only way that we keep the Buddha way is to practice the Buddha way. It can't be just be something we think about. The only way that we can keep this Dharma wheel rolling is to make the effort to practice our practice, to practice the Buddha way. Without each person's practice, without the practice of all beings pulling together, there will be no practice. The Buddha Dharma will die. It is a living thing, and each one of us is breathing in the life of this living thing called turning the Dharma wheel. So each one of us is responsible for maintaining the way. So I'll end with saying that all of these perceptual understandings are various aspects of acting from the position of knowing that we're all in this together and knowing that the most helpful way to respond is to help each other. I think actually the Bible said it best. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Very succinctly sums up our practice. So this is the fundamental teaching of the Bodhisattva way and of skillful and wise actions of body, speech, and mind. Thank you very much.